The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the daily Kitzur Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzur365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Moshe Hillel Kaufman.
Baruch haba, we're doing Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Simon Samach Beis, Hechos Masu Matan, Sifim Tez Zayin through Yud Ches. Sif Tez Zayin. V'roi loy le'odam lamad b'dibura. Your person should stand by his word. Sha'afilu loy nosan adayin mois. Even if he did not give money, loy rasham esadav, and he didn't make any markings on the product that he's buying. As we explained the other day, that giving money is a kinyan d'araisa. Midrabanan, they said it wasn't considered a kinyan. However, since it's a kinyan d'araisa, they said you can't back off and cancel the transaction. You must go through with the transaction, otherwise the person will receive a curse of Mishapara, which means really that you're not allowed to back out of the transaction. So in a case where you didn't not give part of, you didn't give part of the money, all the money, or even part of the money, which would normally trigger the Mishapara clause, which would make you required to go through with the transaction. It was just a verbal agreement without any kinyanim, even daraisa, even darabonon. And the kinyan was not completed. If they agreed on the price, neither side should back out of the deal. And whoever does back out of the deal, whether the buyer or whether the seller, he's considered lacking trust. The term Chazal used, is someone who lacks trust. And Chazal were not fond of him. Ki roi l'ishli yisroel lamay b'diburay, because a yid should stand by his word. K'mar shekasav, like it says in the Pasuk, sheiris yisroel liyasu avlo. Remnants of Yisrael will not do bad, v'lo yidar b'chazav, they will not speak falsely. They'll keep to their words. V'yoy shemayim, and someone who's a yoy shemayim, yeshlo l'kayim afilo machshvay slibay. He should even keep not only what he says, but even what he thinks. If he decided to sell for a certain price, he had in his mind, I'm going to sell this item for $5. But and the other one does not know what was in his head that he thought to sell that item for $5. And so when he came and he wanted to make a bid for that item, he offered more than the $5. He offered $5.50, say. The seller should only take the $5 that he intended to originally sell the item for, shagama believer that he decided in his head. L'kayimah shakosuk, l'kayim, what it says in the pasuk, v'doyve emes bovavoy, and he speaks truth in his heart, meaning even though it was not said, he just thought about it, but he thought about it in a way that he was certain and sold on it, so that he should keep. So too a buyer, shagama believe by liknais b'schum kach v'kach, he decided he's going to sell for X dollars. He should not go back on that, even if now the seller is willing to give it to him for less. And anything similar to this, b'shad from when it comes to other matters, shabein odom l'chaver, between one man and his fellow man. Yeshlo l'kayim machshvay sliboy, he should keep the thoughts of his heart. In gama believe lasis is a taiva, if he had it set in his mind that he's going to do a certain good for somebody, v'yeshbi adalaseis, and he has the ability to do it. About tzarchi atzmai, but when it comes to things that are for his own benefit, kol shein v'hem tzarch mitzvah, as long as there's no mitzvah aspect to it, ein tzarch l'kayim afilu moitzes fosav, you don't have to keep even what you say. So for example, if you say to yourself, I'm going to get myself an ice cream, and there's no mitzvah for that, you could therefore decide, I'm not going to get the ice cream. You don't have to go through with it because you said it and you want to keep to your word. If it's between you and yourself and there's no mitzvah involved, you don't have to go through with it. Now, the key phrase in here, which is very important, is that you set in your mind that for sure that's what you're going to do. Most of the time, a person goes to a store, he's looking to bid on something, he doesn't have a set price that for sure he's going to have in mind, that's who he's going to sell it for or buy it for. Let's, using our example, a person might think, okay, I have this item, you know, I don't know, maybe I could get $6 for it, maybe I could get $5.50 for it. I'm definitely not going to go below $5 for it. I'm probably only going to end up with $5, but you know, maybe I could get $5.50, maybe I could get $6. Such a situation, if someone comes ahead and bid $6, there's no inyan of being a Yoy Shemayim and selling it for $5, because we're only talking about a situation where you had set in your mind that this is the price you're going to sell it for. That's when these halachas kick in. But if you're unsure or you're thinking what it's probably going to be, but you didn't say, you didn't have in your mind anything set in stone, so then these halachas don't apply. A common example, let's say, is someone calls up a travel agent and they're asking me, I want to go buy a ticket to England, and he's pretty set he's going to buy a ticket for England, and he always uses this travel agent, and he calls him up, and he really wants and has in mind he's going to buy a ticket to England with this guy. And now the travel agent gets back to you, and he says, well, you know, I only have these dates, or only have these prices, and that's not to your liking. So you don't have to go through with it, because that's you didn't agree on that, all the terms and conditions, similar to how we learned the other day when it came to to Misha Parah, we're talking about a situation where you agree on all terms and conditions, not necessarily the price alone. So here too, if you didn't, you know, the price was a good price that you had in mind, but the flight times are not good or the days are not good, that's not something that would bind you to this. That's something that's outside of this realm. Let's say an exception to this halacha would be if there was new information, new significant information that we wouldn't have thought of would have happened, or extreme price changes that are not normal. If something like that happens from when you first say your word until you are ready to close the transaction, those changes also allow someone to back out of a deal. Again, if he did not give money or do any other type of kinyan. So let's say a common example is you're looking to buy a car, a used car, and you go find someone who's selling it, and you tell them, okay, you work out a deal, $2,500 for the car, everyone agrees, and you tell them, okay, I'm going to pick it up in 2 days from you, and I'll bring the money then. And later that night, you're speaking to your uncle, and he asks you how you're doing, and you happen to mention that you're buying a used car, and your uncle says, oh, you know, I have an old car sitting in my driveway. It works just fine, and we have nothing to do with it, and he'd be happy to give it to you for free. Okay, so that is very new, significant information that had you known originally, you never would have made the deal with the seller of the car for $2,500. So in this case, you can call back the seller and you could tell him, you know, I apologize. I know I agreed to buy the car and I was going to pick it up from you, but there was new information. My uncle told me that he's going to give me a car for free, so I really don't need this car anymore. So in such a situation, a person can back out, and that's considered fine. Now, even though the seller might say, hey, you know what, you know, I told other people that the car is sold, so I turned away other buyers, and I already made plans, and I bought my new car because I thought I was going to sell this car, and now I'm in a lurch because you left me in between, that doesn't make a difference. The seller sort of jumped the gun a little bit, because the halacha is that until there's more of a transaction, I mean, we said you gave a portion of the money, or certainly if a kinyan was made, that's what binds it without going back. But one side can't go back. But in a situation like this, where you made a verbal commitment, so if there's a significant change in circumstances that was not foreseen, or there were extreme price changes that were not likely to happen but did happen, so that's a situation when you can back out. However, in this example, if you would have said, you know, agreed with the guy that the car will be purchased for $2,500, and you give him $100 now, and you say, I'm going to come back in 2 days with the balance of the $2,400, and then I'll you'll give me the title. Well, that goes with what we said the other day. That's a Misha Parah thing. Once you gave part of the money, so then already that locks you in. You cannot back out of the transaction, even if new information that was unforeseen has now surfaced and will change your needs and will make the decision no longer a good decision. That doesn't make a difference. Once a kinyan was made, or once part of the money was made, that sort of already locks you in, and you're stuck. Now, again, This is not a halacha that's ben adam l'makom. It's a halacha ben adam l'chaveri. So both parties agree that the verbal commitment does not have to be kept to. So then there's no problem with chusa amana. That's not an issue. This is only if the other one, the side that's getting the raw end, does not want to cancel the transaction and agree to the back out. In such a situation, that's when a person's sort of on the hook for mechus amana. But if he can offer the guy a little bit money to get out of the situation of mechus amana, so whatever the both parties agree to, that's certainly fine. Sometimes a person hires a worker, tells him he's going to hire him. Tells him I'm going to hire you to play at a chasana that I'm making, and now a few weeks later he finds out that there's somebody who could do it for $50 less, or there's somebody who sings even a little bit better than this guy, and you want to cancel out in such a situation. So then that would be mechus amana. You shouldn't cancel out. You're not allowed to cancel out. However, if you really want the other person, you could tell the guy, listen, you know what? I had a change of heart. I want to cancel out, but I know I already gave you my word. If I give you $50, will you agree to, let me off the hook? And if everyone agrees, that's certainly fine. One more example, just to illustrate the concept, is what happens sometimes is you have someone who's renting an apartment and he has air conditioners, through the wall air conditioners that he bought and put into the apartment. Now he's buying a house, and the house that he's buying already has air conditioners, through-the-wall air conditioners that will be keep staying there. He made an agreement with the seller that they'll stay. So now he wants to sell the air conditioners that he has in his apartment. So let's say he made an agreement with somebody, I'll sell you the air conditioners for $500, and when I move out, then you could take them, and everyone agreed, but no money changed hands. No kinyan was made. And now the person purchased his house, and lo and behold, the air conditioners were taken out. The movers made a mistake, and they took the air conditioners out, and they cannot be retrieved anymore. So in such a situation, the person can tell the buyer to the air conditioners, I'm sorry, we sold the air conditioners thinking that we were going to have new air conditioners in our new home, but the air conditioners were taken, so now we're going to take our air conditioners. We're not interested in buying new air conditioners for our home. Such a situation, a person will be allowed to do that because, again, that's new information that was unanticipated that came up, and had they known earlier, they never would have made that deal to sell the air conditioners. However, again, just to illustrate the point from the other day, if the person who was buying the air conditioner said, okay, I'll give you $10 now and I'll pay you the $490 balance later when I pick them up, so then that becomes a Misha Para issue. That makes it something that the person can't back out without getting, again, permission from the seller. Sif Yud Zayin. V'chein, mi sho'im l'chaver li'ten l'ezim matana k'tanev. Someone tells his friend, I'm going to give you a small gift. A gift that has a small value. Now the recipient, or potential recipient, feels with certainty that the person is going to give it to him because it's a small amount. Of course he's going to give it. It's something within his means to easily do. If the person who pledged the gift decided to back off and not give that gift, that's considered a lack of faith. That's mechus amana, which is something that's not allowed. But let's say the person who was offering the gift was offering a very large gift and pledged a large gift. So if he backs out, that's not considered lack of trust. That's not a mechus amana. Because the recipient didn't really rely and feel with certainty that he was going to get that gift from the pledger, because the person making the pledge pledged something that was very large in his eyes, and something that he might not go through with. And we call Malcolm, nevertheless, b'shashu ayma liten lai, when a person pledges to give somebody something, zach liyais b'deya gemur, it has to be with a full heart, with full knowledge. V'lo yehei b'daita l'shanis, he should not have in mind that he's going to pledge it and then back out of it. Ki l'daber echad b'peh, to speak one way with your mouth, the echad b'lev, and have in your heart something else in mind, that's not allowed. You should have an eifa measure of tzedek, and you should have a hin measure that is righteous. What does it mean you should have a hin tzedek? he. The hin measure is less than an ephah measure. So if you have an ephah measure that's a correct righteous measure, certainly your hin measure, which is the smaller measure, is going to be correct and righteous. Elo, what did Chazal dashin? Shehei hein shalchad tzedek v'lav shalchad tzedek. Your yes should be righteous, v'lav shalchad tzedek, and your no should be righteous. Meaning you should say what you mean. You can't say something and then have in mind something else. So here as well, when a person can't tell someone, I'm going to give you $100,000, and then back out, even though he could back out because the person never thought he was really going to, he didn't think with certainty that he was going to make good on his pledge and give him $100,000. He was hoping he would, but he knew that that might not go through, that might not happen. Still, you're not allowed to do so intentionally by offering that amount and then backing out and saying, well, I'm allowed to back out because it's not a mechusar mana. Now, everything that we said now about making a pledge to someone, to give someone something, and then backing out, that's all talking about if we're giving it to somebody who's not poor. But if someone says, I'm going to give to a poor person, whether a small present or even a large present, you cannot back out of that pledge anymore. Because when you pledge something to a poor person, that's like a promise to tzedakah. When you make a promise to tzedakah, you can't back out of that. So saying you're going to give someone poor something because of that's because it's tzedakah, you cannot back out. But feel gama beliba litain, and when it comes to tzedakah, even if you didn't say outright you're going to give, you just settled in your heart with certainty that you're going to give X amount to a certain organization, you have to keep your thought. So therefore, if a person decided for sure, I'm going to give $100 to organization X, and he decided to do so with certainty, wasn't contemplating it, he was doing it with certainty, so then he's chayv to give the $100 to organization X, even though he didn't say it out with his mouth, he didn't write anything down, he's still chayv to give it. However, what often happens is a person thinks, how much should I give this organization? Should I give him 100? Should I give him 150? Should I give him 50? And they're not sure. Maybe I'll give him 100, but they didn't decide with certainty that's what they're going to do. They're kicking the idea around in their head that hasn't reached the level where it becomes a neder. It becomes a neder is when it becomes the level that they decided, that's it, that's what I'm going to do. I made up my mind. I'm giving them $100. That already becomes something that becomes a neder and the chayiv to give. Now, sometimes people ask, if someone's offering a large gift in their eyes, but to the recipient it's a small gift. So what's the halacha? We said again, when there's no tzedakah aspect, we're not dealing with an ani. If it's a small gift, so then that's something that they have to go through with. If it's a large gift, that's something that they can back out if they did so mistakenly. So the question is, which way do we look at it? We look at the giver or the receiver. So again, since the whole concept here is we're saying that the receiver is relying on that, he feels that it's going to happen, so then we're going to really be looking at the receiver. If it's something that's a large gift in the receiver's mind, even if it's a small gift in the giver's mind, if it's going to look as if it's a large gift in the giver's mind, even if it's a small gift in the receiver's mind, the giver can back out. So if a person thinks $20 is a small amount, and he tells and his friend, who thinks $20 is a large amount, says, oh, I'll give you $20, so the friend could back out, because we look at the giver, because that's what's being judged, is whether it's a real commitment or not. And vice versa as well. If in the giver's eyes it's a small amount, and in the recipient's eyes it's a large amount, so as long as the small amount it's a small amount within the giver's eyes, so then that matana has to be completed, and the person has to do it's not something that he could back out of. Similarly, that's why when it's sibur, when a group offers to give somebody something, so almost all the time a group's offer is always considered davar mu'ad, a small amount, because when you're dealing with a group of people, so almost everything becomes a small amount, as opposed to when you're dealing with individuals. Sif Yud Ches. Someone wants to sell real estate, land, obayis or a house, uvoishnayim, and two people come, kol echad oyma ani ekach b'damim elu, each one says, I want to buy it for the same certain price, meaning both bidders are offering the exact same price, and you can't go to one bidder and say, well, whoever bids higher gets it, so, you know, who wants to bid more? We're talking about a situation where both bidders have given their final price, and it's the same. Ve'en echad mehem bala meitzer, and neither of the bidders is the adjoining property owner. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that if you have a field and someone's selling it, so the neighboring fields, they have a right over everybody else to get the field. The reasoning behind it is because when you have two fields together, it's much easier to do your work on the fields because you have the plow and it just goes straight from one field to the other field. If you had two fields in separate locations, so then it makes the work a lot more difficult and you don't get that economy of scale. So when you have a Baal Meitzer, when you have someone who owns the field next door, so that person has priority. But in a situation where both bidders neither of them are Baal Meitzer, none of them are neighboring property owners, so who do we decide who should get that property? If one of the bidders was a fellow member of your city, he lives in your city, and the second bidder is an outsider, someone who does not live in your city, lives in a different city. So ben iroi kaidim, the person who's from your city has precedence. Hayushneim yoshvei iroi, let's say both people were fellow city members. Ve'echad mehem shcheino, one of them happens to be your neighbor, he lives close to you. Shcheino kaidim, so the neighbor comes first. Ne'masheni hu chaveru haragulimoi, but let's say the other bidder is your friend. Ushcheno einu ragulimoi klal, but your physical neighbor is not your friend. You don't really have much to do with him. Chaveru kaidim, so your friend comes first. Hayachad mehem chaveru ve'echad mehem kaidim. Let's say one of the bidders was your friend and the other bidder was a relative. So chaveru kaidim, so your friend comes first. Shenema, because it says in the pasuk, toiv shachin kariv, a friend who's close is better me'och rochig, from a distant brother. Now, people sometimes have to keep in mind, it doesn't mean that your friends always beat out your relatives, meaning your brother and certainly your father, where there's a keep it of the aim aspect, but even your brother or your cousin, they're also your friends. You also have a relationship with them. So it's not that a friend always beats out a relative. A friend will beat out a relative that you don't have any shaychus with, that you don't really have any relationship other than being blood relatives, but you don't have any other interactions that keep you friendly. But obviously somebody who's a relative that you also have interactions with and are friendly with, that'll beat out someone who's just a friend. However, let's say an example, if you have a good friend and you have your third cousin that you never see except once every 4 years when you're both invited to the same chasana, so that would be a situation where a good friend would beat out. But anyone that's more of a closer relative is almost always going to be a situation where the person is also not just a relative, but also is considered a shochein, a chaver. He's someone who you have a relationship with. Continuing on, avalishar kol adam, but when it comes to everybody else, meaning people who are not your friend, kroivoy kaidim, a relative comes before these other people. A relative comes before a fellow city member and before a neighbor that you don't have a relationship with. Chutz mi talmud chacham, except for a talmud chacham shekaidim, that a talmud chacham has priority over the relative. Afilu lishcheinoy v'chaveyor haragilim etzloy, even to someone who's your neighbor and someone who's a good friend. However, if one of the two bidders was an adjoining property owner, who kaidem l'chulam, that person, that adjoining property owner, he has precedence over everybody else. Now, even if, let's say, you sold the property to someone other than the neighboring property owner, the adjoining property owner can take the purchase price amount and pay off the buyer, and have him removed from the land, and he will be the landowner, even though it was after the transaction was already done. He still has that right. Even in a situation where the buyer is a Talmud Chacham and he's good friends with the seller and he is a close by neighbor, and the adjoining property owner is an Amah Aretz and he is very distant from the seller, he has no relationship with him whatsoever. Hamatzen Kaidim, the adjoining property owner has precedence, so Masalik is Lakech, and can have the purchaser who purchased it ahead of him removed as long as he pays him the money. This hierarchy of who comes first, these are all decided by Chazal, Lakai Mashakosov, in order to do what it says in the Pasuk, Vasisa Yoshava Toy Bene Hashem Alekecha. You should do what is good and righteous in the eyes of Hashem. One just quick thing to point out is the halachas of Bar Mitzvah are a little more complex, but one thing to point out is that the concept is more involved because we're trying to have the two fields together. There's an economy of scale. So let's say you have a person who has a house and he's selling it, and one of the neighbors want it. So if the neighbor is going to knock down both houses and build one big house, or he's going to connect the houses together so there'll be both houses will be able to use simultaneously, so then there's a strong bar mitzvah claim. However, if let's say the house was sold to somebody else, and now the adjoining property owner wants to pay the money and get that other person off of the property, but he's not planning on making the properties used as one, or joining them, or building on them as one big building. He just wants to have an investment property that's next door to him, so then that wouldn't apply, and that would be a tough claim, and he would not win such a claim as a bar mitzvah. Kol tov.